Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Green Room Sports Turf podcast produced by Bigger. Every fortnight, we're going to bring you interviews and conversations with Bigger members, staff, and those within the golf industry to take a closer look at what goes into the preparation of a modern day golf course. Thanks to everyone who listened to the first edition of the podcast, and I really appreciate your feedback. The sound levels were a little off, I'll admit, so sorry about that, and we'll try and sort that out for you this time around. But to be honest, I really didn't expect so many people to listen in the first time around, and expected to basically just be talking to myself for the most part. But it's brilliant. There's so many bigger members got involved, and I'm really looking forward to building a community of listeners who, hopefully, are willing to make an appearance on the show as much as they're able. Like Greenkeeper International, this podcast is here for you guys to shout about what you've been up to, and it's a really great opportunity to build a community of greenkeepers who are proud of their work and their chosen careers. Who knows, we might even get a few golfers listening in. This week, we've got a conversation with Peter Todd, who was recently appointed Estates Manager at Royal Norwich. You'll most likely have heard about the club as it's made quite a stir when selling the existing course to housing developers and shifting across town, purchasing the site of Weston Park Golf Club. The entire course has been redeveloped and it's due to open next September. But recently, Royal Norwich officially launched its Turf Care Centre of Excellence, which is a two-storey maintenance facility where the greenkeepers will be based. It sounds grand, and it is. But there are some really interesting things to learn about from our conversation with Peter, not least how having a good, smart, clean facility can really inspire your greenkeeping team to better things. After the conversation with Peter, I sat down to talk with Bigger CEO Jim Croxton and Membership Services Manager for the Southeast, Kerry Phillips. We discussed what we'd seen at Royal Norwich and how the maintenance facility of the future could look. Okay, on to our conversation with Peter. So we just had the opening of this spectacular facility here at Royal Norwich. I was just wondering if you could tell me about the initial thinking behind having such a professional, such a spectacular facility.
I think, firstly, appealing to young people to work in our industry seems to be far more challenging than other industries. There's no doubt that it isn't particularly sold as a career at the school leaver age very well. Yeah. That's partly the industry's fault, but it's also partly, in order to sell yourself as a career plan, you've got to gain access to the school leaver. And that it can be very challenging to allow for schools to allow you as an industry to promote your particular career to their school leavers. Because many schools have a viewpoint on what is a good career for their school leavers,
yeah.
And their studies are tuned to that. Yeah. And horticulture is often not seen as being a first choice for somebody. It's often seen as being a second choice or less of importance as a career. And we've seen that with salaries in horticulture as well. Mm-hmm. So we can't always up the amount of pay level to staff. Sometimes budgets don't allow that. But if we can start with providing them with good facilities and looking after the staff and making staff feel valued, then I think we're making strides in moving forward. The sort of things I'm thinking of, for people who get soaking wet when they're working all weathers, how good a facility do you provide to dry their clothing quickly? Do you provide any facilities to wash dirty clothing that's covered in mud where they've been turfing or something? Or do they expect it to take it home and put it in their ordinary washing machine?
Yeah.
Just practical things.
Yeah.
Because you're often dealing with someone's partner and you think you might be keeping one half of the couple happy, but the other half is objecting because their partner brings this filthy, smelly clothing home.
Yeah.
So it's not always just about with employee motivation, motivating the employee, it's motivating the employee's partner to feel though you're valuing them. You know, having good machinery that's reliable, that's well looked after, often requires better facilities to check it. So having a hydraulic lift that you can lift the machine off the floor,
yep.
You're not crawling around on a dirty, cold concrete floor, you can actually stand and check the mower from a standing position.
Yeah, one of the most interesting things actually, I thought that from these facilities is the grey floor. Mm. That was such a, I'd never even thought of that. Mm. But it seems like, not, yeah, like you said, you can spot leaks instantly. and also it lightens the entire place. I thought that was really interesting. Where did you where did that idea come from?
I worked at the London Club. We always painted our floors at the London Club. I had a very good workshop technician who'd been in the industry all his life. And a lot of our ideas were sort of developed over many years at London Club, but painting the floors was a sort of basic for us. And of course, I think one of the things, and a lot of the design philosophy for workshops these days, I've sort of looked at in relation to the car industry. And at one time, you used to look in a car dealership workshop, and it'd be a filthy place, full of oil and dark and dingy. You now go to your car dealer. Often there's a glass partition between you in reception and the workshop. You can see all the cars on the ramps. They're almost like a car showroom in terms of they're glossy, they're bright, they're clean. And no longer are they dirty places, because engines have become very sophisticated and you can't have dirt in the environment. So there's a big drive to make workshops in the car industry immaculately clean places, quite almost clinical. And I think if we're going to attract workshop technicians, we need to make, we've got to compete with the car industry. So we've got to find technicians who don't, who want a decent workshop to work in that isn't a dingy, dark environment, because it no longer is in most of the car industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And to a degree as well, you're going to open this facility for industry, for members of the hotel, staff to come down for training and that sort of thing. And you've got a lot of windows in this place, which you said allowing natural light in as well. But also, you're going to be able to have a lot of people looking in and seeing what your greenkeepers are doing.
Absolutely.
Very similar to that car dealership thing. I really get that point. That's really interesting,
And from a safety point of view, it's actually communication, because I don't have to ring the workshop to find out. Sometimes I can look out of this glass through to the workshop and I know, oh yeah, he's got that mower ready on the hydraulic lift, he must be checking it over. Or I can look down and see, oh, we've got two fairway mowers out, there isn't any more available. You know, there's it's quicker communication because we've got see-through walls, as it were.
Talking about the windows as well, I mean, I've been to greenkeeping facilities that are no more than porter cabins, you know. But you're talking about the windows, you've got, did you mention there's a window in every room in this place?
Is that every toilet. There isn't a toilet, shower room, even rooms where people think, oh, you don't need a window. Insisted they put in. And that was for two reasons, not just light, but natural ventilation. You know, all this madness of turning something electric on with a fan in a room that you're quite capable of opening the window unless it's varied. You know, let's have an environment that's more natural.
You also talked about, more natural environment, natural light as well, the importance of that to the health of the staff and that sort
of thing. You know, the only reason we won't open windows will be if we're running the air conditioning. Because it's not sensible, it doesn't control in them. But one thing occurred to us, actually almost after we started constructing, was by having air conditioning, we didn't have to open the windows in what was a very dry summer. And we cut down on the dust coming in. Because people don't realise how dangerous dust is to your lungs. And protecting people from lots of dust is also important. And also it saves the facility getting dirty. So air conditioning is not just about controlling the temperature, but it's also about reducing dust coming into the building, because they're usually sand blowing around in a greenkeeping environment.
So one of the things, you mentioned was you've got the air conditioning to keep it cool in here, because you've got you've also got the solar panels on the roof, and they were expensive, no doubt about it, but I was quite surprised to hear you say that they'd be paid back within 7.5 years. That was quite surprising. Are solar panels something that could be achievable by most golf clubs?
I think the one thing about PV or solar schemes is they can easily be phased. You can put so many up that you can afford, and you can also just keep adding. So you could start on a small scale and then just keep increasing. But in most cases, if you've got a greenkeeping building that's in a location on the site where it doesn't detract, because it's usually in a location away from the clubhouse, they're easy to achieve places to put the panels. Your user electricity, increasingly we will be going to more electrically operated equipment, whether mowers or transport vehicles. So there's definitely options. I do think battery power will become a significant issue, because for electrically operated machines, if they're used in the daytime, they're going to need charging at night, and unless you can store the power. It will be down to some of those thoughts on that. But we've got all our daytime electricity, so heating, lighting, operation of equipment in the workshop, is all through our own power generation.
That's interesting. So you can't yet store it overnight?
We can't store it. And of course, the other use of nighttime electricity is pump stations, which are significant power users.
Yeah.
And our thought process is wait for the battery technology to come down in price and also the technology improve. And that can be another phase for us, a bit like you were saying, sometimes, you know, how can you make this more affordable? Where it's phase it.
Talking about affordability, and one of the probably the most interesting things about this entire facility is the fact that you've reclaimed this from a prison.
The frame is from a refrigeration warehouse. The whole of this steel frame is a refrigeration warehouse.
Okay.
From the prison came the two staircases.
Yeah.
And the fencing. If you look at the gates, they're very clearly from prison.
Very secure.
And they're an anti-climb fencing.
They're anti-climb, are they?
They're anti-climb. You can't get your fingers in it.
Well, whether it was by design or not, it's very interesting, because crime at golf courses is very important. You know, it's a plague almost at the moment, isn't it?
I spoke about earlier about the access to this site. This is totally enclosed in the daytime. When you're out working on the golf course, there won't be anything unlocked. All the staff have magnetic fobs, electronic magnetic fobs that operate key locks.
Yeah.
So they can come and go in the building themselves, but they're authorised access people only.
Yeah.
And then the gate was radio controlled electric, so it's always closed unless the staff open it for their own access.
And if a visitor makes themselves aware?
There's a video phone.
Yeah.
In two locations in the building, in this office and the workshop. And if there's no one present in the building to open the gate, there'll be a phone number for them to ring. We don't want people coming to the building who are not supervised.
Yeah. Now, those security measures are...
We've got infrared CCTV outside and inside.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Those security measures, they're not cheap. But would you have been able to afford them if you hadn't made the savings... Otherwise,
No doubt that we've built a facility here that we couldn't have afforded if everything was new.
Yeah.
We've actually kept within the budget by saving on the frame, saving on the fencing. We've done something in excess of what we thought we were going to do because of that.
Yeah.
You know, there are some things that we've definitely managed to achieve, which we didn't envisage initially.
Well, how does that how did that conversation? Where did you know? It's easy to say we got it from a prison or we got it from a refrigeration thing. How did that? If I'm a greenkeeper and I've got a limited amount of budget and I think I can't afford a new facility,
you've got to find someone.
Well, how did you find it? Where did you come from?
It was a stroke of luck, really.
Yeah.
There was a conversation at the golf club between Gary, who built this facility, and our GM, I think, over what Gary did. And Gary said, take down steel frame buildings.
Right.
I take down steel frame buildings and re-erect them. He does civils and groundworks contracting. Yeah. He does a whole range of civil engineering jobs. And we said, you don't happen to have a building of this size? He said, well, give me the plans you've got drawn up and I'll have a look. And we gave him the plans. He said, I've actually got two. He said, one is a former prison building that's coming down, and one's a refrigeration warehouse.
Wow.
And the refrigeration warehouse was probably as near the plans as you possibly could dream of. And we just added the staff accommodation section on the back, which wasn't part of the original steel frame, was added. And we had to add some steel structure in order that we could put PV on the roof to support the amount of PV.
Yeah.
But we got fortunate with Gary, but you know, there are steel frame buildings being taken down. It's whether you've just got to tap into who's your contractor. It's often demolition contractors, and that's who you'd probably go to.
Yeah, interesting. It's one of those things. You've got 300 or 500 or 1,000 members, and they do things. They do jobs, and you never know.
You've got businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We're just going to take a break there. It's clear that the Royal Norwich team are doing incredible work in preparing their course while making sure the existing venue remains open for members. You might even say they're a good candidate for the bigger awards. I'm just going to take a step away from the podcast for a moment to tell you about how you can nominate someone who you think has done incredible work this year. Whether your team gets to the final or not, nominating them is a fantastic way of showing your appreciation for their efforts. This year, we've relaunched the awards with a number of new categories, and the winners will be announced at the BTME Welcome Celebration in January. The Outstanding Contribution of the Year Award, sponsored by Jacobson, is in recognition of the growing number of members who undertake voluntary work each year for the betterment of the association or any number of charities. If you know of someone who has gone above and beyond for a good cause, this is the award for them. The Championship Performance of the Year Award, sponsored by Rugby Taylor, returns for 2018, but isn't just restricted to those clubs who host major European Tour events. You may have done incredible work to get your course fit for the Euro Pro, Trilby Tour or an amateur event, and all nominations will be considered. The final category is Greenkeeping Project of the Year, sponsored by Baroness. This is another new award for 2019 and recognises those greenkeepers who have undertaken a specific project. This can be construction, renovation or repair, elevating your home course to new heights. The nomination process is really simple. It takes just a couple of moments, as at this point we're just looking for some general information. Head to the Bigger website for more details and to nominate your greenkeeping team of choice. It's free to enter and could change someone's career forever.
So the main, it seems, the main takeaways from this, I think, are respecting your staff, it seems to be.
Valuing
the staff and making them feel valued.
Mm-hmm.
And
very much so.
And making the greenkeeping facility more accessible, as in it, we're right at the centre of the site, and you have training rooms and that sort of thing there where people can come down and meet and people can conversate with them.
Part of the philosophy of having a training room here was that because the building is not too distant from the clubhouse, was to actually get the teams together, the clubhouse staff and the greenkeeping staff, and the clubhouse staff use the greenkeeping facility as a training facility, because often there isn't a lot of interaction between clubhouse staff and greenkeeping staff, and it was to create a closer bond between the two teams as well.
What's the biggest thing you've learned in this whole process, or the biggest thing that surprised you in this entire process?
A project of this scale is complex in that there are so many players in terms of utility companies when you're doing something, putting in new power, electric, water. How you set up the contract, who's responsible for which area, and how do they all interrelate, and who is going to take responsibility for how all these things key together, because it's all about timing. Is that ready for that next contractor? And it's very easy to give the whole job to one main contractor and say you're responsible, but that comes at a very high price usually.
Right.
The way we've done it is much more complicated in that we broke the contract up into a number of contractors and separately contracted people, but then you have a big project management job in-house. And I think as a organisation, we probably underestimated how much communication is needed if you run the contract in that way. Because there's so many regulations to do with building control, and when you're using reclaimed materials, it's, as I said in my speech earlier, it's much more complicated, because you've got to make sure those materials comply with the current building regulations, not when they were put in the building that you've taken down.
Yeah. And your greenkeeping team, we're still a year away from opening the course, but you've said some rules, almost, that no boots upstairs, that sort of thing. How have they reacted to the new facility? Has it inspired them? Are they eager to learn? How have they engaged with the whole process?
The first thing is, it's much easier to create a set of standards to work to when you're at a newer facility. I say it's easier, it's not impossible to do it in an existing facility, but it's got to come from leadership. Somebody's got to say, that's the standard, that's what's expected, we've provided you with this great facility, now we need to look after it. And we've set up our stall that we intend to be the benchmark facility in the region. And in order to do that, and that applies not just to the Green Human Facilities, but to the golf course and the whole business, we need to set standards. So we are working with standard operating procedures that are written in writing, and everybody has to do the work to the same standard.
Are these brand new?
No, I always operated them at the London Club, we're adapting the same model to work here according to the different golf course environment and what have you. But basically we will have standard operating procedures for everything done on the golf course, aeration, cutting greens, you know, fueling up machines, washing machines, here we are, look, rolling, rough mowing. So basically the how to do and how not to, things you must do, in order that we have consistency throughout the team, and also that people know what's expected of them.
Yeah.
There's nothing left to chance. It's there. If people want to refer to it, they can take it out on the golf course with them in their training phase.
Yeah.
And the person training them doesn't miss anything out because they've got a checklist.
Absolutely. And the teams embrace that.
Yeah, brilliant. You know, we're still, it's early days because I'm fairly new to Royal Norwich. You know, I joined them in 2017 as a employee, but I was working as a consultant prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of my first introductions, was to work to standard operating procedures. And that is going, that's throughout the club, not just in the greenkeeping, that is spread throughout the clubhouse as well. So other departments are producing the same standard operating procedures from, you know, washing a coffee machine or, you know, preparing a meal. So it will become part and parcel. But this is part of change management. We as a club have set our stall out of what our aims are, and we are driving in that direction by introducing new working procedures. And the staff are on board with the direction we're going, really. I think, you know, seeing the new golf course develop, it's very motivational to staff. Being provided with a fantastic facility is motivational to staff. To get all of you visitors today to come and actually, you know, acknowledge and support us in opening it, I think in itself will be motivational to staff, because you've come and said what a fantastic facility, and people admiring what is their work in preparing it, organising it, in itself is motivational to the team. They're proud to show off the facility that they work from. So I think it inherently becomes an inspirational work environment, which must be good. Richard Branson is a very clever marketeer. He portrays an image that he is this enormous company, Virgin. In actual fact, Virgin isn't that big a company. But one of his philosophies with staff is, if you have happy staff deliver to happy customers.
Mm-hmm.
And we are wholeheartedly embracing that psychology of, we make our staff happy and our customers will become happy because our staff are happy. And that is key to why we're doing this with the facility.
Thank you to Peter for taking the time to talk to us about some of the things that's gone into the project at Royal Norwich. Reclaiming portions of an old prison to build your greenkeeping facility is certainly something I'd never heard of. But away from that, just some of the things they put into the building really give you an insight into how greenkeeping facilities could look in the near future. Stepping away from Norwich for a moment, and next year the Open returns to the shores of Northern Ireland for the first time since 1951, and bigger members are being invited to apply for a place on the volunteer support team for next year's event. The Open at Royal Potrush is going to be an absolutely incredible event. A place on the support team gets you access within the ropes, allowing you a money can't buy view of some of the greatest golfers in the world. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. And the RNA has once again requested the assistance of bigger members in helping keep the course in top condition. You'll be raking bunkers for your chosen match, but it's a small price to pay for the experience, especially since Royal Potrush has the fewest bunkers of any Open venue. Full bigger members can apply for a place on the support team by completing the application form, downloadable from the bigger website. After speaking with Peter Todd at Royal Norwich, I sat down with bigger CEO Jim Croxton and member services manager Kerry Phillips to find out what they thought and whether they agreed that a better facility could improve the profession's reputation and help to attract more candidates to the role. So it's Carl here. I'm at Royal Norwich with Kerry Phillips, Bigger Member Services Manager for the Southeast, and Jim Croxton, CEO of Bigger. We've heard what Peter's had to say about the importance of good facilities. Basically, the two of you, what's your reaction to what you've seen today?
First of all, it's clearly a very impressive facility. Anybody that knows Peter Todd knows that it wouldn't be anything other. He has high standards, he's employed to have high standards, and therefore there are high standards in the facility he's created for him and his team to work from. What's, I think, really critical is it seems to have the needs of the workforce at heart. So it's built around the fact there needs to be great welfare facilities, it needs to be a place that people would enjoy working from and in. And so because of that, because those people create the golf course will benefit. So I think it's really interesting to see a golf club that has put the people first. I think, you know, there's the famous Richard Branson quote about, you know, look after your staff and they'll look after your customers. And I think that runs through this business. It certainly runs through Peter. And I think that's really nice to see, because I think it'd be very easy for any business to think, what's the right housing for the machinery? What's the right place for... to make sure we look after this enormous expensive fleet of things we've got on products, but actually not put the people first.
Yeah. Kerry, you're on the road a lot. I mean, in general, what are greenkeeping facilities like? Do you get disheartened when you go to most places, or are you surprised?
I'm surprised how good they are, or they seem to be these days. I mean, they do vary an awful lot, don't they? We have, you know, I can go into something that literally is a shed. A porter cabin type thing that was a toilet to this sort of facility.
We talk about not using the word shed anymore, we're using maintenance facility and that sort of thing. Is that nitpicking, or is that an important point to
make? I think it's really important. I think it proves that the guys need a sense, they've got a sense of pride in where they work. Yeah. And I think if you call something a shed, you'll use it like a shed. It's a maintenance facility, then it's something completely different, especially here where you've got educational needs as well, and for local people to use.
So obviously we'd like to see this more larger. Obviously there's the investment, isn't it? It's obviously been a lot of money, but it's interesting to see how much was actually reclaimed. It's fascinating to drive that price down. The fact that You might see the press release of this sort of thing, you see, oh, that's miles out of our reach, it's pretty impossible. But actually, there are ways of managing the price to bring it down and just to make it more manageable and that sort of thing. Worth looking into.
It's also been designed, its location, its access, and how it's configured is designed to save the business money in the future.
Yeah.
So it's in the most efficient location, it's got the most efficient access for deliveries, and it's configured to be an efficient facility so that they can do more with it.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating when he talked about the solar panels. It came to £100,000, I think he said. Oh, the price was a very high price, but he said it'd pay itself back in 7.5 years. That's incredible.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. I mean, that's the dream. I think a number of us have been sold over the years with a cold call from the company saying, we'll put solar panels on your roof. But at a business level, in a high fuel consuming industry, which potentially in a busy year this can be, then there's got to be a great payback.
And when he's talking about putting in batteries as well, so they won't even have to use the grid at all in future years.
Yeah.
Use the grid at night.
It's very much, hopefully it's a vision of the future of the industry, I don't know.
But this facility, not just the maintenance facility, the Turf Care Centre of Excellence, which I like the name of, I really like that, why not? I've been to a club where the big sign on the maintenance facility says, you know, Department of Agronomy, which I think positions the greenkeeping team in a different way to the shed. But this whole facility is a visionary club. The Royal Norwich Golf Club has had a fairly unique set of circumstances in the opportunity to sell their land in Norwich and look to the future, but they've properly looked to the future. They've worked out what does a successful golf club look like in the future. They've created their sort of values and their strategic aims, and they've built all of this around that. If we could ask the golf industry to do one thing, it would actually be to look to the future and work out what a club needs to be to succeed and thrive, and then work towards that. Whereas there are still far too many golf clubs working towards, is anybody playing tomorrow? And that's the kind of business, current business need.
One of the things that we're really pushing as well, and we're talking about across the association, is how to get more people into greenkeeping. And I was having the conversation with Peter about, if you are a young kid, or certainly a young girl perhaps, more than a boy, and you come into a facility that is basically a shed and it's messy and that sort of thing, and it's cold, it's the middle of winter, you're not going to see that as a career that you're going to fancy for the rest of your life. But if you come to a spot like this, it's nice and clean, you real think that you're respecting that sort of thing, it might attract more people to the industry. So
I agree completely. Bigger has for 30 plus years, and not just us, but our members and the people in the industry, across the whole industry, have been professionalising the industry for decades. And arguably, the talent and the professionalism that exists in the industry is better than actually some of the employers deserve, because the employers haven't caught up with where we've got to. Our members are suffering because they are struggling to fill vacancies at clubs, particularly at the coalface end of their staff teams. You know, take on new apprentices and people new to greenkeeping. By extension, their businesses are suffering because they're not able to provide the service they wish. And yet, a facility like this just demonstrates that if you can invest and you can demonstrate that it's a profession and it'll be a professional, enjoyable place to work, you're going to have a far better chance of attracting people. Because everyone knows how good the profession is at the top end, once you've had a successful career. But as you rightly say, if your introduction to it is, well, you'd work in this shed with one leaky toilet and a rusty, holy roof, then how many parents are going to sit there and go, yeah, absolutely, that's what I want for you, son or daughter, that's the place I want you to work. Whether we like it or not, parents are heavily involved in young people's career choices nowadays. I'm not sure some of the facilities that Kerry and I have seen would pass the muster of the parents of some young people about to join industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
No. I spoke to some of the greenkeepers a little while ago, and they said they feel that Royal Norwich respect them by supplying them with a decent facility. They feel respected by the club, which is brilliant.
It really seems that way, doesn't it? All right, brilliant. All right, guys, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate that.
Okay, that's it for this week. Don't forget to apply for your spot on the Open Support team. And if you know of a greenkeeping team or a greenkeeper who you think deserves a bigger award, make sure you head to the website and nominate them now. I hope you enjoyed today's show, and I look forward to speaking to you again in a couple of weeks.